The International Energy Agency reports a massive gap between announced green hydrogen projects and those that have actually secured funding. Out of a huge pipeline, only about 4 million tons of supply are expected by 2030. So, Troy, is the hydrogen revolution stalling before it even begins? Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology shaping global industry. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, we're diving deep into the hydrogen economy. We're seeing a flood of headlines about breakthroughs, government funding, and major corporate deals. But we're also seeing data from the IEA that suggests a major disconnect between hype and reality. We'll unpack what this means for Western companies, focusing on corporate strategy, technological competition, and the real-world projects that are actually moving forward.
Exactly. The key isn't just knowing that hydrogen is important. It's understanding where the capital is flowing, which technologies are gaining commercial traction, and how policy is creating specific market opportunities. We'll translate the noise into actionable intelligence.
All right, Troy, let's start with that IEA data. It sounds like a lot of projects are stuck in limbo, not reaching a final investment decision. Why the delay? And where is green hydrogen actually economically viable right now?
It's a classic case of commercial reality catching up to policy ambition. The analysis from Project Drawdown and the IEA is clear. As of 2026, green hydrogen's viability is limited. It makes sense primarily in existing hydrogen-intensive industries. Think petroleum refining and the production of ammonia and methanol, which already consume about 90% of industrial feedstock hydrogen.
So it's about replacing dirty hydrogen with clean hydrogen in established processes, not creating entirely new markets overnight.
Precisely. The other key area is in hard-to-electrify heavy industry, specifically steel manufacturing using direct-reduced iron processes, and as a potential fuel for long-haul maritime shipping. The high production cost of green hydrogen is the main barrier. Without strong economic incentives or carbon pricing, it can't compete with fossil fuel-derived gray hydrogen.
What does this mean for U.S. and European manufacturers, especially those not in steel or chemicals? Are they left waiting?
Not at all. It means they need to focus their R&D and strategic planning on applications where hydrogen provides a unique value that justifies the cost. This isn't about powering everything with hydrogen tomorrow. It's about identifying specific, high-value industrial processes or vehicle applications where electrification is impractical.
And for trading companies, is it too early to get involved in sourcing or distribution?
It's early, but the groundwork is being laid. They should be monitoring the development of regional hydrogen hubs, like those funded by the U.S. Department of Energy, and building relationships with producers in areas with abundant renewable energy. The key is market timing. Don't overcommit to infrastructure before demand is secured through long-term offtake agreements.
So the actionable insight for executives is to be ruthlessly pragmatic. Focus on niche applications where the green premium is justifiable and align investment timelines with firm customer commitments, not just ambitious government targets.
That's the core takeaway. The market is maturing, but it's still in its early stages. Precision is paramount.
Given that focused market, how are leading technology companies adapting their strategies? I saw that Ballard Power Systems just acquired UK-based GeoPura. That seems like a big shift for a company known for making fuel cells.
It's a very significant strategic pivot. Ballard is moving from being a component manufacturer selling fuel cell stacks to becoming an integrated hydrogen ecosystem provider. By acquiring GeoPura, which specializes in producing and distributing green hydrogen for stationary power, Ballard can now offer energy as a service.
So instead of just selling the engine, they're now selling the complete power solution, including the fuel. Why make that move now?
It's about lowering the adoption barriers for customers and capturing more of the value chain. A construction company doesn't want to figure out hydrogen sourcing and refueling for a temporary power generator. They just want reliable, zero-emission power. This acquisition allows Ballard to deliver that end-to-end solution, directly competing with diesel generators in off-grid applications like construction sites and major events.
We saw a similar focus on a specific, high-value market from fuel cell energy. They just signed a major agreement with Fit Energy USA to supply up to 380 megawatts of power to data centers.
Yes, and that deal is a perfect illustration of targeting a critical need. Data centers require 24/7 high-reliability baseload power. Grid instability is a massive risk for them. FuelCell Energy's molten carbonate fuel cells provide that on-site, independent power. This deal, with an immediate deposit for the first 30 megawatts, validates their decision to scale up their own operations to 500 megawatts.
How should European and U.S. manufacturers view these moves? Is vertical integration the only way to win?
Not necessarily, but it shows the need for a clear go-to-market strategy. If you're a component supplier, your customers are these integrated providers. If you're an equipment manufacturer, you need partners who can handle the fuel infrastructure. The key is understanding that selling a hydrogen-powered product requires selling a fueling solution alongside it.
So, the insight for executives is to critically assess your position in the value chain. Decide if you're a technology supplier, an integrated solutions provider, or a specialized end user. The Ballard and fuel cell examples show that solving the customer's entire problem, including the fuel, is a powerful competitive advantage. Let's talk about the core technology. We're seeing two different paths for hydrogen engines emerge: fuel cells and direct combustion. A new fuel cell design from researchers at the University of New South Wales seems to tackle a major problem. What did they solve?
They addressed one of the most persistent engineering challenges in fuel cells: water management. The electrochemical reaction in a fuel cell produces water. If that water isn't cleared efficiently, it blocks the flow of oxygen, degrading performance and reducing the cell's lifespan. The UNSW team has developed a new internal structure that optimizes water removal.
So, a better plumbing system, essentially. What does that mean in practical terms?
It means higher, more consistent power output, greater durability, and potentially lower costs, because you may not need as many complex ancillary water management systems. This is particularly critical for heavy-duty applications like freight and aviation, where reliability and power density are non-negotiable. This makes fuel cells a more robust and commercially attractive option.
But at the same time, we're seeing incredible progress in hydrogen internal combustion engines, or ICEs. China's Weichai Power just announced a 580-horsepower hydrogen engine with a thermal efficiency of 46.8%. Is that number as impressive as it sounds?
It's a world-leading figure. For context, modern diesel engines for heavy trucks typically peak around 45-50% thermal efficiency. Achieving 46.8% with hydrogen, a fuel with very different combustion properties, is a massive engineering accomplishment. It makes hydrogen ICEs a very serious competitor to fuel cells, especially in the heavy commercial vehicle sector.
What does this competition mean for U.S. and European truck and heavy equipment manufacturers? Do they bet on fuel cells or hydrogen ICEs?
They need to be developing capabilities in both. Hydrogen ICEs can often be adapted from existing diesel engine platforms, which could mean a faster and cheaper path to market. Fuel cells, on the other hand, promise higher efficiency in the long run and are true zero emission at the point of use. Manufacturers need to evaluate the trade-offs in performance, cost, and infrastructure compatibility for their specific vehicle classes.
And for trading and distribution companies?
For them, the fuel is the same. But the rise of hydrogen ICEs broadens the potential customer base significantly. A fleet operator familiar with maintaining combustion engines might be more willing to adopt a hydrogen ICE truck than a fuel cell vehicle. This could accelerate demand for hydrogen refueling infrastructure.
So the actionable advice is, don't pick a winner yet. The technology is evolving rapidly. Vehicle and equipment OEMs must pursue a dual-track strategy, while infrastructure players should prepare for a larger, more diverse market of hydrogen-powered vehicles.
Technology is one thing, but these projects require massive capital. We're seeing huge government funding initiatives in both the EU and the US. What's the latest in Europe?
The EU just allocated approximately 1.09 billion euros from its innovation fund to 9 major clean hydrogen projects. This isn't a simple grant, it's a fixed premium mechanism. Projects will receive a payment of between 0.44 euro and 3.49 euro per kilogram of certified hydrogen they produce for up to 10 years.
That sounds like it's designed to bridge the price gap between green hydrogen and fossil fuels.
Exactly. It de-risks the investment by guaranteeing a level of revenue, making these large-scale projects bankable. It's a direct incentive to get steel in the ground and electrolyzers running. This funding is specifically targeting the decarbonization of transport and chemical industries.
And are we seeing this policy translate into actual industrial projects?
Absolutely. Look at Germany. The steel producer Salzgitter AG just signed a long-term agreement to buy 10,000 tons of green hydrogen annually from energy company EWE, starting in 2030. This hydrogen will directly feed their SALCOS program, which replaces coal-burning blast furnaces with hydrogen-based direct reduction technology to make low-carbon steel.
So a German steel company is buying green hydrogen from a German energy company to decarbonize its production. This is the hydrogen economy in action. What does this mean for U.S. and European manufacturers?
For steel users, this means a reliable supply of green steel is coming. Automotive and construction companies can start planning to use it in their supply chains to meet their own ESG goals. For manufacturers of industrial equipment, pumps, valves, control systems, electrolyzers, this represents a massive, government-backed market opportunity.
And what should U.S. companies know about the American approach?
The U.S. Department of Energy is taking a multifaceted approach. They're offering loan guarantees through the LPO, funding regional hydrogen hubs to create entire ecosystems, and providing powerful tax credits through the Inflation Reduction Act. The goal of the Hydrogen Shot Initiative is to drive the cost down to $1 per kilogram within a decade. The message is clear. The U.S. is using public funds to crowd in private investment across the entire value chain.
The actionable takeaway here seems to be that Western executives need to actively pursue these government funding and support mechanisms. They are not just policies on paper. They are creating tangible, near-term commercial opportunities for those prepared to act. All right, Troy, let's boil this down. After a week of major developments, what are the three key strategic takeaways for executives in the U.S. and Europe?
First, the hydrogen market is segmenting. Widespread commercial viability is still a ways off, but for specific hard-to-abate industries like steel, chemicals, and potentially heavy transport, the transition is happening now. Focus your strategy on these profitable niches rather than broad, undefined markets.
Second, corporate strategy is shifting from components to solutions. Companies like Ballard are integrating vertically to offer energy as a service, while fuel cell energy is targeting high-demand applications like data centers. Success requires solving the customer's entire problem, which includes fuel availability and infrastructure.
And third, the technology race is on, and it is not a one-horse race. Breakthroughs in fuel cell durability from UNSW and hydrogen combustion engine efficiency from Weichai Power mean that OEMs and equipment manufacturers must maintain expertise in both pathways to remain competitive. The winning technology will likely vary by application.
That's all the time we have for this week's briefing. We hope this analysis provides the clarity you need to navigate the week ahead. Join us again next time for another edition of Troy Technical Intelligence.
To make sure you don't miss an episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening.